listener of the show and Patreon supporter, Irina. Her son is a musician or a composer and had made the most recent theme song for the podcast, and then sent me a whole bunch of other ones that I could try out. So there's a few of them, and I think I'm going to go with number three. It is May the 1st. Happy May Day. Let's check it out. What does this new one sound like? I like it. Short and sweet. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Hopefully, you're not hearing the buzz of the lawnmower across the street, but it for the first time in a long time, it's like a beautiful, warm day where I live. There's an interview today, so it's if you're hearing the buzz, there's not a lot I can do to help you at the moment. But want to thank the patrons of the podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I want to give a shout out to M. Liss, Carolyn, Justin, Mary, Teresa, Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Kirk, Elise, Dominic, John, Jason, Irina, Tony, Michael, Christina, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast week after week. And actually, Albert had sent over, he had sent me over a message, and we were chatting a little bit because he was looking over, he was looking at some insurance documents from Kaiser, and there was a lot of MindBody stuff in there. So he emailed it to me. Albert, I'm going to take a look at that stuff over the next week because I'm very curious about what stuff was in it. I've talked about this before, but I think it was Cigna, maybe like two, three years ago. Could have even been longer than that. Where I saw a commercial during like NFL Sunday where they were talking about emotional wellness and mental wellness and things like that in a commercial for a major insurance carrier in the United States. And that's just not something that's typical. So, let's take a shot at that. Let me do the intro here before Zoe bursts in the garage. She should be here any moment, but, by Michaela Lynn. So B Y and then spelling is Michaela, MICAELALYNN on Instagram. She is a mind body coach. She struggled through 30 different diagnoses and over 100 symptoms. She's in Nevada. And so we kind of talk about her recovery, ultimately like what some of her faves are in this mind-body space, and what is it that she does with clients and some of the knowledge that she puts out there to be able to ultimately help people. So I'm excited for you to check it out. Look in the show notes to be able to see more on her. I like her content. I like her writing. I like stylistically kind of what she brings to the table. So without further ado, here is Michaela Lynn and I. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Thank you for being here. I am on with Michaela, Regulate with Michaela on the socials. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for being here. I was actually recommended to speak with you from somebody who's been on the show before, and I chat with him quite a bit. He's a cyclist, and he had said, "Hey, like you'd be a good person to chat with." And he said, "If for nothing else, we could talk about tattoos." So maybe we spend some time talking about that. That's cool. I'm an enthusiast, and you're obviously an enthusiast. So yeah, that's cool.
That's so funny.
So I want to get into really like the brass tacks of what you do, and really it's around regulation, but that's an ambiguous term and that's tough to describe if I'm just saying, hey, she talks about regulation. So let's get into that. But first, I want to just sort of meet the person behind the social, meet the person behind the content. Tell us a little bit about you and kind of your background and your story and why you're a good person to listen to when it comes to this topic.
Yeah. So my name is Michaela and I'm a mom to my son. And I homeschool him, and I started my business almost a year ago. I think it was July, and I coach women. I help women really just create lives that are in alignment with their morals and their values. That way they can live pain-free, symptom-free, and just feel more regulated day to day. And yeah, I really help women. Of course, it started with me being chronically ill for over a decade. And really, I struggled definitely during my recovery. I did it on my own and I struggled a lot, which is the mass amount of information that's out there. It's noisy. And so just really learned through trial and error what really worked for me. And then now what's really helped my clients, which is the same path I took for myself. And I really just like to simplify it for them as much as possible, because I'm not going to, pretend it's not deep work and that it's always simple, but I do think it can be simplified and made less overwhelming for them. And originally I did help men and women both, but I just really found with working through both that men and women are very different, especially when it comes to mind-body syndrome and just really regulation day-to-day and living aligned lives that looks very different. So I just found this pull to really work with women and focus on women. And so I just solely work with women now, and that's been really cool.
What were some of your symptoms?
I had over 30 diagnoses and over 100 symptoms. So just to kind of narrow it down, the major diagnoses I had were endometriosis, interstitial cystitis. I had neuropathy. I had sciatica. I had eczema, psoriasis. I had histamine intolerance. I had mold illness. I had parasites. Tons of things.
Yeah. I saw, it's pinned on your Instagram, but there's a video, and I'll link your handle in the show notes so people can find it, but it's sort of a, I don't know what I would call it, maybe a slideshow that kind of shows it looks like you were documenting a lot of this stuff as time went on, right?
Yeah. So it's funny, not funny. I'm sure a lot of people do this that are chronically ill, but I didn't think one day I'm going to document this to share it. I really documented at the time for really my doctors. If I would take photos of things that say a symptom would be flare during that time, but then in the office, of course, maybe it wouldn't be. So it was a lot of just photos from that. And then I know the one of me in the hospital when I had my endometriosis surgery was the one my mom just randomly took. But yeah, so I do have documentation from that, but it's kind of interesting because really I only had that from just keeping track of symptoms, because that's definitely something you do when you're chronically ill. You keep track of all that stuff. So
now there's a lot of noise, recovery noise out there, right? There might be 100 approaches, but there's probably only a couple of them that really maybe speak to you. You can read 20 books on this topic. And I've probably read 20 books on this topic, and not all of them speak to me in the same way. One of my favorite ones on the topic is a lot of people's least favorite one. And so, I guess what spoke to you, or
which one is that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah. So Zero Pain Now by Adam Heller, I think is
okay.
It's probably my number two of all the ones that are out there. And for a lot of people that have read that one and then read all the other ones, they kind of think that, hey, this guy's a slimy sales guy, and that's how it comes across. And I'm like, but it's so simple. And I think that's why I think it's so effective, because a lot of the stuff is so layered, and it is it just seems like it's a lot of steps, and sometimes it's hard to see the end, right? Because it's so wavy. Whereas he sort of, I don't know. And a lot of his is in, what is it? Neurolinguistic. So it's a lot of it is in the language and how you say it and how you do it. And I think that that's just a really pragmatic, I'm systematic. And so if something can be more prescriptive, I think that that's really nice. And his is just so basic. And that's kind of why I really enjoyed it.
100%. And it makes sense. Everyone finds something different that they like, because we are just all so different.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah.
Was there a particular author or a particular speaker or somebody that because I'm sure that you came across this method in a lot of different voices, and some of them you probably thought was BS. And then there might've been one or two where you were like, oh, this is landing. Is there one or two that you're at liberty to name off where you're like, yes, that this is accurate?
Yeah, I can just think of three right off the top of my head. So Nicole Sachs was the first person I ever came across. I was just a big researcher when I was chronically ill, always trying new diets, new protocols at that point, because I had tried so many things with my doctors. And so just over research. Anyways, her podcast came up, thank goodness, and started just listening to her podcast, and she's incredible. And the next one I found was Dan Bugilo. And I really resonate with his approach because, again, he just really simplifies it. We do differ a little bit. I'm sure we'll get into that as far as how I help my clients individually. I do a little bit of journaling And then the other one, which I don't think is talked about a lot with like mind body syndrome, isn't the way she terms it, but is the book Mind Change, and it's by Heather McKean.
I haven't heard of that one. Talk about that one.
Yeah. And she has social media and a podcast as well with her husband. Mind Change, it's very similar to, you know, the mind body syndrome and everything a lot of the other practitioners talk about. What I really like about her book is she was really chronically ill as well and had tons of diagnoses and tons of symptoms. And she really looks at the symptoms similar in a way that I do. I mean, she probably, again, says different verbiage, but it's really that they're signals to underlining emotions and things, you know, that, again, with the mind-body syndrome, you know, that are too scary for our brain to really look at and admit and all those things. So the signals come up. But I really like her approach, and just she really focuses on, you know, the life you really want to build for yourself if you weren't chronically ill. And that just really helped me through my recovery, was to really focus on those things and really get clear on even what type of life I wanted for myself, not being chronically ill. Because when you're stuck in it and you're in the thick of it, you can't even picture that, you know, for yourself. So
how long ago, by the way, were you in the thick of it? And then how long ago were you like, oh, I'm out of it?
So I found mind body syndrome, like pulled up Nicole's podcast, learned about Dr. Sarno, I believe it was 2021. Mm-hmm. And then I would say 95% recovered by 2024. And then at the very beginning of 2025, the only diagnoses and symptoms I had left were endometriosis, a little bit of OCD, and a little bit of anxiety. And those were gone again by the beginning of 2025. So
what sort of things were most helpful for you? If you two or three things in your toolkit, and they can be as obscure or as prescriptive or as sometimes it's just a realization. And then other times it's, I did a prompt for 20 minutes every single day at 8 a.m. and at 6 p.m. Like whatever it is, what do you think are the two or three most effective for you?
Yeah. So I do, I'm a big fan of journaling, but I'll admit for myself and then for clients now, I do not do journaling every single day. I found it to be really overwhelming and like very prescriptive, I guess, when it was every single day. But do find it extremely effective, especially for women with really just honestly, like uncovering emotions. Cause I think we think we're so clear on our emotions and on past conflicts, trauma, but we are so overstimulated and just constantly go, 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 that really sitting down with a pen and paper just makes it clear. And then as far as like a lot of tools, honestly, I do not use a lot of tools per se, but really focusing on, again, like living in alignment with your values and morals. And you really can get clear on that again through journaling and really just working through and seeing so clearly. It's so common for people who are chronically ill or having chronic pain, chronic symptoms. They are living so out of alignment. And what I mean by that is just truly like their relationships, their habits, everything are just really, they get born out of survival, unfortunately. And they're often habits and, again, things that we pick up from other people. And, you know, they were a way for us to get through conflicts, to get through trauma. So really just breaking those down and shedding those and replacing them to things that are actually you, you know. And again, we get so far from that when you are chronically ill. And then, yeah, so living in alignment, really journaling, and then just really getting clear. And again, this is more like on alignment, but really getting clear on what has you in survival versus, again, what's it going to look like for you specifically to be out of survival, because that looks so different for each one of us. Often we really compare ourselves, especially as women, and we think, oh, if one mom or one woman's doing this, I should be able to. Mm-hmm. But all of our capacity, so really the word I often use is capacity, is so unique and so different per woman. And we really have to get clear on what that looks like for us. And all of our nervous systems are so different. All of our sensitivities are so different. And again, love journaling for this, because it really helps you get clear on what that is. And then as you work through recovery, it becomes a lot more clear as far as what your capacity even is, because typically when you're chronically ill, your capacity looks so different than when you're recovered.
What do you, you mentioned having a kid, and I'm sort of, In my head, I'm visualizing the intersection of mom guilt and chronic symptoms. Do you have any any words on that?
Because I feel like
it's a thing. Sarno in his book would talk about this like age of responsibility, which is basically like age between ages like 30 and 60, where the bulk of the people that he would see in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, that's where their biggest, most ferocious symptoms would come, and for a variety of reasons. But can you talk about like mom guilt and symptoms and things like that?
Yeah. So I really was chronically ill for majority of the time, actually before my son was born, because he was born in 2019. Mm-hmm. And then I, like I said, found mind-body syndrome 2021, but was still going through recovery, obviously, when he was little. But I really started, my symptoms started as when I was really young, and then a lot through my 20s. However, of course, yes, was still chronically ill when I had him. But a big part of my story, and really why I started looking into just like really a lot of, at the time, more so like mindset focused stuff and really just healing, and didn't know about mind-body syndrome when he was born, but really got on that path of really working on myself, I guess you could say, is that because I had him premature, he was born at 27 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And they really never found a reason why. And I remember being on bed rest with him so clearly, and like knowing in my gut that it was because I was so dysregulated and so anxious and just really in survival mode at that time. And I still believe that to this day. And so really, I held a lot of guilt around that for a long time, and then unfortunately had PTSD from his labor, from, you know, that pregnancy, and really worked through that with a trauma therapist, which helped me so much and really helped me, even with the mind body work, really just helped me get rid of that guilt I had around that. And I don't look at it as like a way to blame myself at all. Or like, I don't want anyone to think that, oh, because they had their kid premature, that their story's the same whatsoever. But I still believe this in my gut. And instead, I truly look at it as like my son was the turning point and was like the wake up call that I needed, because I was so dysregulated. And my body at that point had, I had so many conditions already. But that was, I think it was really like the thing I needed to help me shift and be like, okay, like no more. I can't keep like living this way. Yes, with my symptoms and my conditions, but also just at my, at that point in my life, it was so clear even then that I was living so out of alignment. I just, a lot of bad relationships around me, a lot of bad, you know, just like day-to-day against stress-based habits, things of that nature. But I held a lot of guilt, but really worked through that, like I said, with my therapist, with the mind body work. And truly, I think a lot of people say this when they're like at the, when they're done and they're recovered, is I'm so grateful for those years of being chronically ill. And even going through the, you know, years that I was chronically ill with my son, because I do think it's what I needed to really want to turn my life around and like really look at myself so clearly. And I really see our children as mirrors for ourselves, especially as moms. And really seeing that my son, even, you know, when I had him, was so dysregulated when I was carrying him, and then when he came out, and even in the first couple years of his life. And yeah, I just think our kids totally mirror us. But I held a lot of guilt. Do I think it really made my symptoms worse, like I hear often people talk about? Not so much, but I think that's due to the fact of when I found mind-body work and how it lined up with my son's birth. You know, I think it's different if maybe your chronic illnesses, chronic symptoms start up after you have kids. Mm-hmm. But for me, that wasn't really the case. It was just more so it made it so clear that I really wanted to recover. Really, it was in my hands to recover. And, you know, really got the ball rolling as far as like being so eager and so willing, because I think that's so important with mind body work. You have to be so ready, you know, to like do it. So
what, okay. So you've, like, I'm looking at your Substack right now. And I'll link that. And in the description, it talks about being a regulation coach. And I've heard you say dysregulated a few times now.
Yeah.
What does regulation mean to you?
Regulation to me really means, it's definitely not, you know, I think that there's this idea out there that it's really calm, you're really peaceful, you're really zen all the time. That is not what it is to me at all. It means actually you can experience a wide range of emotions, from happiness, like sadness, anger, frustration, and you feel those, you feel them deeply. And there's, in not running away from those, just to, you know, again, be calm and at peace. Instead, it's really about the ability to come back to your baseline. And everyone's baseline looks different based off of their true personality, what truly feels safe to them in their body. And so really, it's the ability to come back to your baseline, to yourself.
Talk about a couple of things that you do with people to sort of help them kind of, because when I think of the word regulation, I think of like I'm good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So again, yeah, it's like I'm good in me and what good feels to me, because again, that can look different per person. But again, I don't use a lot of like extra tools as far as like meditation, breath work. I think if they help you, I think that's awesome. It's just not something that helped me during my recovery, because I definitely tried both amongst other things. But really, again, working through repressed emotions to me is huge, because I'm just a believer in it. And that's why I stand strong on the journaling, because again, I think we think why we respond to things the way we do, or why things we're sensitive to, or what things dysregulate us. But really, working through repressed emotions is so helpful. And then really, again, living a life in alignment, like it sounds cheesy, but it's so true, because if we are constantly living and waking up and going to bed, and all day we're making decisions and living lives that are not aligned with our values, aligned with our morals. And again, we know deep in our cores that we would be choosing something, or we know we should be doing something, but we are doing something different because we are stuck in survival mode, or we're perfectionists, or we're chronic people pleasers. That's so dysregulating, because truly, when we are choosing, you know, something outside of us, and we're choosing something out of survival, out of fear, that is such a message of perceived danger to the brain. And that's a huge one I work on with clients, is messages of safety, and really working through fears and perceived dangers in their day-to-day life, as far as, again, relationships, habits, and schedules, things of that nature. But then also even just the fear and like danger we have around our symptoms and our conditions. And yeah.
What are some, I guess, like, I'd be curious to get your take, because you've talked to probably a lot of people about this in their everyday lives. I'm curious about that, because having a one-time capital T trauma is one thing, right? Trying to unravel that. If you really kind of know, if you're a coach or a therapist working on somebody with that, that's one thing. But the everyday stuff that you're constantly just over and over and over again, what are some of the ones that you discuss with people that they tend to encounter or tend to talk about, or that you tend to unearth as being like, this is a chronic, and let's take kids and spouses out of the equation, meaning not the people that live in your immediate household, but it could be situations or people, or jobs is probably too obvious too, but I guess, and maybe this is putting you on the spot too much, but
no, you're fine.
Yeah, just some things that people tend to talk to you, or that you identify as, these are just constantly throwing you into dysregulation over and over and over and over.
And maybe, yeah, so you're talking about like anything from habits to choices.
Yep, and maybe they're not even recognizing that it is, but you can spot it.
Yeah, so you said again, the obvious ones, really common relationships, things with your children and work. And there's even ones that go with that that I feel like aren't totally obvious. But then other ones is like, for instance, the comparison trap has been so huge with women I've worked with, which is like them really comparing themselves to other moms on social media, or even moms in their friend group. And it's like, oh, I need to be waking up at a specific time and going to this Pilates class or this workout class because someone else is doing it. And it's like, right. But if that is, again, not in alignment with, say, your values, and there's something else you value more in the morning, dysregulation, or say it's not in alignment with the way your body works best, dysregulation. So again, we're talking about like morning to night decisions, and that can go even into things like food. I know is a huge one I run into with clients, and they're like, well, I just think, you know, this food's causing this symptom, and I don't understand, because you say like, I don't need to be fearful of food, and it's not the underlining thing behind my symptoms. But, and you know, that's a constant one that comes up with women. And we often, especially as women, are eating very out of alignment, again, with our values and with also just the way our body feels best and what tastes best to us. So even, you know, really the foods you are choosing, say if you're following a really restrictive diet and it does not, you know, support your families, as in your husband's or your kids' like values, and as you guys function as a home, again, dysregulating, it causes a lot of dysregulation, or even choosing foods or diets that are really popular on social media and say you hate all those foods, very dysregulating. And instead we're blaming the foods for our symptoms, mm-hmm. when really that's not what's going on here. And again, movement's a huge one, picking movement, because you want to, with women, it's really common. They want to really shrink their bodies. And again, it's going to cause dysregulation if you are choosing movement from a place of fear, because you are terrified of gaining like weight, or if you are terrified of being ever in a bigger body again, because you were before ever terrified of being in a future bigger body, you are causing that chronic dysregulation, because again, there's fear behind it. Yes. But you are essentially really running away from yourself. And that's a really common thing that, oh gosh, branches off to so many other things that can cause dysregulation. Is really, it comes back to when you are constantly running away from who you are truly meant to be and what you really value, what your morals are, it's going to cause that chronic dysregulation, because fear is at the base of that. And it's really like, you might not have a lion in front of you, but that's the way your brain thinks, you know, when you're making these choices out of fear.
Okay. So all those things were things to not do or to stop doing. What do you encourage people to do? Just some examples.
So are you talking about when it comes to like habits, choices, things yep. throughout the day that dysregulate? Yep. Yeah. So a big one is that would be through either journaling. Often I will have clients that even can just really, they already know, and they don't need to journal through everything. And they just know what choices, habits are causing them chronic stress, but they've been living in survival. They don't really know how to make a different choice, but they know it's on the surface. And really just getting clear on what choices are in alignment with your values and morals. And again, that's really helpful with journaling. Sometimes you just know. For instance, I knew very clearly for a lot of years I was trying to shrink my body. So instead, I would really, during my recovery, when I was avoiding movement for a really long time because it would flare my symptoms, and then when I knew that I needed to start incorporating it to really bring down that fear and show my body, my brain, that movement was safe, I really started just getting clear with what movement I actually enjoyed. And that's a really cool part about recovery, is you really get to just get to know yourself and really get clear on the things you enjoy, the things that bring you joy and bring play back into your life. So really focusing on that and getting clear on what that is for you versus what it is for somebody else.
What movement do you enjoy?
I really enjoy being outside. Yeah. That's probably my favorite form of movement. So a lot of just walks, trails, hikes. And instead, I used to spend hours in the gym. I used to be a personal trainer, and there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with being hours in the gym, but it was out of alignment for me, because I really did want to be outside mentally yeah. and physically. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the name of the podcast is the Mind and Fitness Podcast, of course. Not unfortunately, but over the years, I'm in my, what year is it? 2026. This is the ninth year, it's been 9 years, right? So in the beginning in particular, I would try to do one episode 1 week that was mind, one episode the next week that was fitness. That was kind of the original idea. At this point, it's been 90% mind. But one of the questions that was asked quite a bit early on to new listeners was like, what fitness program or routine should I do to stay in shape or get in shape or whatever? And at that time, I was at the very beginning, it was kind of some specific things. But within a month or so of getting that question a lot, it just became like, what can you do that is so fun that you want to do it tomorrow? Really? Like, and yeah, yeah. It could be anything. Because for me, it's like I could do Olympic weightlifting and CrossFit and sprints and that kind of stuff. I could do that every day. But that doesn't mean that everybody can, right? Like other people will find bouldering really fun, or other people, like there's so many things, or, you know, walking or hiking or whatever. And I think that an important thing to remember too is like, what's true today might not be the case in a year too. And to be okay
with
maybe adjusting or changing those things.
No, it's so true. And you do have to, I mean, even once you recover from mind body syndrome, you're really having to constantly re-get to know yourself, but it just becomes so much easier once you've done this work to do that. But no, that's so true too.
As you've kind of like rounded third on these symptoms, and they're, you know, for all intents and purposes, diminished, completely gone, you know, over the last year and a half, couple years or so. What are just some things that you retain doing, let's say more than a couple times a week? Like, are there just certain things, or, and maybe it's just a perspective shift that is different than if you and I did this interview 5 years ago?
Oh gosh, yeah, I think a big one, just every single day, I just try to be as intentional as possible with the life that I'm living, the life that I'm living with my son, because that's a huge one for me, was just learning to live a lot more intentionally. Again, this comes back to just living in alignment with what my values and morals are and my son's and the ones that, of course, he's so young, but the ones that are important to him too. And just being really intentional with the way I live has helped so much and really slowing down. I don't think slowing down maybe is the answer for everyone. I know every single woman I've worked with, every single woman I've talked to, it's been necessary because we live in such a fast-paced world
Yeah.
and a very overstimulating world. So that's been really important, focusing on that every single day. I do still journal a few times a week. I do it, I think, like different. I feel like than most people, it's changed over the years because now I'm able to do it. I know what to journal about and I know how to get there quickly. So I just really just do it on like my notes app and my phone. And then just really being focused with like getting outside is a very intentional practice that I have. Again, that's daily because I've noticed just even after being fully recovered, if I'm not constantly outside, constantly in the sun, constantly moving my body that way, I definitely will get into a state where I'm feeling more overstimulated. And even I've gotten into tiny, days or, seasons of more dysregulation than not. So just being really intentional about that. But again, my toolkit is small because really for me, it's about living a life that's aligned with what I actually value, what I actually brings us joy and what our morals are.
Michaela, where can people find more about you and the things that you'll say here? I'm going to put them in the show notes, but where could they find more out about you?
Yeah, of course. I'm pretty consistent on Instagram and TikTok. Both of those are Regulate with Michaela. And then my website is michaelalynn.com. And I also recently started YouTube just to do a little bit of longer form content because I know I enjoy YouTube for that reason. And it can be really a lot better to digest when you're chronically ill, especially with how overwhelming and overstimulating a social media can be. And then I'm also on Substack because I really like posting a lot, just more in-depth information over there because I really like to simplify this work for people. However, it's deep work and there's a lot to include at times with certain subjects. So on Substack, I go more in-depth on specific topics.
And all the Michaelas, by the way, that she threw out, because there's a lot of ways to spell that name, is
Yeah.
MICAELA, Lynn, LYNN. Don't hang up, but Michaela, thank you for being here
Thanks for
today.
having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.